And we are live. Good afternoon, everybody. It is Angie Atkinson, and I'm here with the lovely and talented Lise Colucci. Lise, welcome back.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Always happy to have you. Today we are going to talk about toxic family systems and the roles we play. But before we do that, I'm going to introduce you to Lise in case you haven't met her yet. This is Lise, my partner at queenbeing.com. She, Lise Colucci. She is a narcissistic abuse recovery expert, a certified life coach, etc. She's a trauma expert. I could go on and on. Make sure you check her out at Lise Colucci Narcissistic Abuse Recovery here on YouTube, which I will link after this goes live, comes out this video. And she's also at queenbeing.com/Lise. She does amazing group coaching for our team, and she does really good stuff. So make sure you check her out if you don't know her yet. You're gonna love her. All right, let's jump right in, shall we?
Do
All
it.
right. So, Lise, how would you define a toxic family?
Define. Okay, first off, I'm gonna just start this with it's 7:30 a.m. here. So if I'm off, okay.
We're good.
Toxic family. I would describe a toxic family. I've had it described to me by a client as a cult.
Oh,
It's
sure.
as a cult system. And I've always described it as a toxic system. You have a toxic person, let's call them a narcissist, mother, father, whatever. They are creating a delusion. They are creating the roles everyone will play, and they're placing everyone in their roles, which then everyone in the family automatically starts to follow. Whether you like it or not, if your sister's a scapegoat, she's the scapegoat. And as much as you try not to treat her like one, there is the role that she's already in based on what the toxic person. So unfortunately, the whole system works together. And when one person tries to pop out of it and be healthy, the whole thing starts to crumble, the narcissist melts down, and then we have drama.
Yes, absolutely
That's
agree.
my brief description.
I think that's an excellent description. And from what I've seen and experienced and unfortunately experienced, you see that they lack boundaries. In toxic families, you're not allowed to have a boundary, right? And your privacy is absolutely invaded. You might find that people overshare information in that family that you might find like a, having a very detailed discussion of your intimate experiences with, your mother or something in an inappropriate, I don't know how inappropriate that is, but there's a certain level of detail that I don't think personally is appropriate to talk about with your mother. Or they might, and it might be kind of against your will in some cases, right? Like where she sort of forces you to talk about it. Or, you might find that it doesn't, okay. So if those types of things are happening, by the way, it doesn't necessarily mean you're absolutely toxic, right, as a family. But when you combine that with all these other things we're going to talk about today and what Lise just explained, then you're looking at a potential toxic family. So you might find that there's a lot of drama, right? You might find that it's almost an addiction to this, to a toxic family. You might find that you feel, and here's something that really, you might feel anxious or nervous whenever you have to interact with those people. Can you hear me okay, Lise?
Yes, I had a weird one where I would fall asleep. I wasn't anxious or
Oh,
nervous. I felt like narcoleptic or something, like
that's,
chronic fatiguey feeling for real. I would start dozing off.
I can't even imagine. I kind of get it actually. I tend to dissociate a lot
And I
with
think that's what it was. It's like deep
stress and
sleep. Yeah.
yeah. Dana talks about she sleeps when she's not well, like when she's struggling with things, she tends to sleep. And I think that's I tend to go the other way, unfortunately, and not
Normally
sleep.
I do, but with the whole dynamic of like so much of it was like I'm going, yeah, I'm going to
So
sleep.
much. Right. Totally. Yeah. And then, well, and on the flip side of it, one thing that I used to find pretty consistently was I never felt comfortable ever with my toxic parent. Never, ever. Like, not at home growing up, not when I invited. The idea of that person coming into my home as an adult, it used to just make me fit almost physically sick. And I never once felt comfortable. And I thought, isn't that strange? Because I know my kids feel comfortable with me.
Is that normal? Am I supposed to feel that? No. Is it me? No.
Right.
It's not.
It's not, yeah. It's not normal. No. Right. Mm-mm. And so some of the signs of a toxic family, you might, you might find that they are jealous of you in inappropriate ways, right? Like your mother might be jealous of a mother might be jealous of a daughter, or mm-hmm. a father of a son, or even some other way, right?
Or the friendships that you have outside of your.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they might compete with you in inappropriate ways. Mm. Have you seen this?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know, whether I've seen toxic mothers flirt with the boyfriends of their daughters, which I think is ridiculous.
Or body shame a perfectly healthy yes. person because they need to be the prettier one.
Yeah. When I was in eighth grade, right before high school, I hit a size one. And I am, in adult clothing. I went from the children's sizes to the adult sizes. And I remember my mother saying to me, "Now, you'll be fine if you just don't gain any more weight." Like, I was 14 years old.
Same thing. I had the same thing at 12.
See,
what the heck is that?
It's awful. It's awful. Really, yeah. And it definitely affected me and has affected me I don't dwell on that moment, but because of that moment,
Yeah.
I went through a lot of things. Anyway, another thing I think that you see is, let's talk about the competitive thing. Let's say that, let's say that your parent wanted to be a doctor mm-hmm. and then they decided, since they didn't get to be a doctor because something came up and maybe they had you, then now you're going to be a doctor.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. But then if you do become a doctor, then not only do they use and abuse that privilege of having a child that's a doctor, but then they also belittle and minimize you consistently mm-hmm. or compare you to other people, other friends, family members, whatever. I've seen that a lot. What else?
Yeah, I've heard a story of someone in college, and I'm just going to make up parts of this so that it keeps it anonymous, but
of course.
They say they were told they were forced to join a team, like the tennis team.
Mm.
And not only join the team, but compete at a competitive level and remain on that team for the 4 years of college. And when they said, "I can't do it anymore. I can't, this is too much stress. I don't like it. I don't want to do it anymore." There was a complete narcissistic meltdown of you're killing me. You're killing me by not doing this. So
that's outrageous.
Outrageous. Yeah. This is to a at this point, 20-year-old person.
Outrageous. Right? I've seen similar things. Sports, that tends to be a big thing. I mean, not always just fathers, but I've seen it a lot with narcissistic fathers mm-hmm. pushing their kids in sports. And a lot of times these kids are really talented, or they've worked so hard, they've become really talented.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they just end up hating the whole thing. They hate sports mm-hmm. altogether, or even in some cases, or whatever sport they happen to be involved with, because they are pushed so hard. And, it's not good for the kid. It's not good for the team. it's all bad. It's
awful. Yeah.
And then you see the overreaction thing. You mm-hmm. see this a lot in toxic families. You spill some milk. I mean, this is an obvious example but spill some milk and, everybody has a meltdown. Like, just clean up the milk, or they compare you, like I said, they compare you to other people. This is another big thing I see, the victim role, right? Mm-hmm. The toxic parent or even a toxic mm-hmm. sibling playing a parent, a victim, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, here's an example from my own life. When I was a kid, I was a freshman in high school. My mother went away for a couple of weeks, and she had this younger lady come in and stay in the house with us because my father was away too. And so one night I said, "I want to go spend the night at my friend's house." And I did. I was picked up by some friends and boys, and they took me to that friend. But then we all stayed out and partied all night because we were kids. And of course we got caught only because we went back to her home, which was on a farm, and they had a pond outside and everything. And so we swam in the pond, did all things, but we didn't clean up our mess in the house. And so when her parents came home from work the next morning, because they worked overnight, they knew we had been there, and then they called my parents. It was a whole big mess. Anyway, my mother's reaction to this was, "How could you do this to me?"
Mm-hmm.
And I get it, I guess, but as a parent myself, I do my very best. And because of things like that, I do my very best to avoid ever assuming that it has anything to do with me when they mess up, right? But it went way, way bigger than that. That was, I mean, she ended up telling me not to be friends with that girl for the, it's a long, stupid story, but that was my best friend, you know? Point is that acting like a victim, even when it's really literally nothing to, and I even said to my mother back then when I was 14 years old, I said, Mom, if I was thinking about you at all, do you really think I would have done that? Because like, you weren't even in my, like,
right. You weren't there. I would have been scared if I thought about you.
It was totally not about you at all.
Right? You weren't even in the picture. What's that do to a narcissist? Ah.
Oh my gosh. Exactly. That's right. Because how dare you not think of me?
How dare you not think of me every second of your day?
Exactly. So that was another thing. We talked about boundaries, right? Not respecting yours and not having their own appropriate. And so sometimes you'll see parents who stay like, okay, so for me, you know, nudity is a boundary, right? For me. And so when my kids were little, before they were like talking a lot, and I just didn't think about it at first. And then with both of my boys, who are 6 years apart, each, you know, I kind of just lived my life. And if they were babies, they would stand in there and hang out in the bathroom while I took a shower or whatever, no big deal. Cause I would be home with just them. And as they got older, like when they were, in both cases, when they were just, had just turned 3 years old, they happened to notice that I didn't look like them. And they both said, Mom, your penis broke. Something to that.
What is that?
Yeah. What is, oh my God, something's wrong. So I then never was nude again in front of them. And then my youngest never had the problem, because I just didn't do that with, you know, by then. I mean, so anyway, point is, you might see a toxic parent being like, I've heard stories from clients where their fathers would just be naked in the house, or mothers, you know, depending, without even if their friends were around sometimes.
It's a boundary thing. Yeah. It's a boundaryless.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like, okay, this is a funny example, but like, have you ever seen the Goldbergs before?
No.
Oh gosh, you should watch it. Anyway, it's a silly TV show, but it's on like ABC or something. But the mother of the show, I mean, she's like endearing or whatever, but she's really straight up in so many ways, like very narcissistic. And she's constantly like over-involving herself and crossing every boundary just about. I mean, they play it off as funny. It's kind of like that.
Right. Yeah. The funny narcissist.
I mean, really, like she loves them so much, but she's also very focused on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is the type, one type of narcissistic mother, the type who, I think it's called, I can't remember the name of it right now off the top of my head, but the type that, you know, the caregiver type, you know.
Oh, the altruistic type of narcissist. Yeah.
Well, yeah, not so much, but like they'll do all your laundry. They'll
sew. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. The ones that like to create learned helplessness big time.
Yes. That's the one. Yes. Oh. So, so when you go away to college or you move out, you don't know how to do your own laundry. You don't know how to cook your own food, that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Let's see, what about always being right, of course, giving ultimatums, that's a big one. Right? So do you have any, I mean, so for example, when I left my ex-husband, I was working a ridiculously low paying job. And then I got another slightly higher paying, but still ridiculously low paying job. And I had to put my kid in daycare. And daycare was a lot.
More than you make, right.
Yeah. So my parents agreed to pay for half of the daycare while I got on my feet. But then I had to go to church with them every week forever. And I didn't want to, but I did, because I took the chocolate, as Richard Grannon has said, because I needed the daycare to be paid for, you know what I mean? And so that's not exactly an ultimatum, but it kind of was, because it was either that or I couldn't go to work, you know, but they'll give you other ultimatums like, you do this or else you're cut off forever.
Or sometimes the ultimatum is a silent treatment.
Oh yes. Talk about it.
Oh, well, example, maybe an adult is living with the parent, with the toxic parent, and let's say it's a toxic mother, and they try to move out on their own. I have people talk about this all the time, trying to move out on your own, trying to move out 30 some years old, still trying to move out on your own, not the fault of the person. They're stuck in the dynamic of this family. And then when they do it, there's silence. Silent treatment, cut off. I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to withhold all affection. I'm going to withhold all Not that there was much affection going on, but
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. 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 I have seen all the things. Oh, and then the, you know, the conversations, they tend to revolve around like the parent or whoever the, yeah. Oh, can we talk about really quickly? I didn't mean it.
Go for it. Sorry. I'm just listening. It's 7:30.
Well, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at too. Well, it's 9:30 here, but 9:53.
It's all good. But,
yeah. I think one of the things that you see a lot of times is we know that usually there's a single center of the family, right? Mm-hmm. So it usually one parent is the toxic parent, and then you have like the enabler parent, right? Oh, she went away. Okay, I'm gonna talk about it. So there she is.
There we go. I had to, my dog decided to bark. So
oh, no worries. Okay.
I kicked her out. So
I got you. Okay. All right. So the toxic parent, usually there's a primary toxic parent, right? I mean, they're both toxic, right? But one of them is the mean one or the center of the family, right? Everything revolves around one parent or one person. A lot of times it's a parent. And then they have the chronic lack of empathy, of course. They have the, they'll be controlling and rude about the way you look, about who you're married to or dating or whatever or not, whether you have children, your mental health, your physical health, your money, career challenges, whatever it is. So one of the things that I noticed about, my mother found out that I bought a brand new car in 2011 from a family member, and had the audacity. And by the way, it was not a fancy car. It was a Nissan. Okay. And had the audacity to tell my cousin who told her that I had bought a new car. Oh, I don't know how they can afford that. They can't, their finances, they must be really stretching themselves thin. I mean, it was a freaking Nissan.
Oh, the judgment and the criticism. Oh,
I mean,
God, over anything, you can't tell them anything good. And when they get it from the flying monkey, it's even worse.
It's worse. Yeah. Yeah. So, and of course I was already no contact at that point. So I didn't even hear it directly, yeah. But I heard it from my,
they're just, but, yeah.
You know, I just can't even, but they assume the worst of you. Always. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We are getting low on time, but I just want to run through really quickly some of the roles. And then next time we talk, maybe we can kind of go into more about how to deal with these people. Does that sound good?
Yeah. I was going to add one thing real quick.
Please do. Yeah.
Alert, because it's an important one, because for trying to recover from it, mm-hmm. where you see people stuck a lot is that learned helplessness thing. I mentioned when you said that other part, mm-hmm. and that is when they do a lot for you and create a situation where you feel like you can't do things on your own.
Yes.
There, and or they criticize you so much that your self-esteem is so low that then you rely on them, or they financially have the means to support you. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're feeding you information that you can't make it on your own while they're sending you to college. So it's this, yes. It's so many layers of confusion. And you see people with college degrees, with all kinds of skills in life that can't feel like they are good enough or can do it on their own without their parent. And
so true.
That is, I think that's such a hugely toxic thing for people. It also, the other thing I wanted to mention was they don't let you individuate. They don't allow you to become your own person. You're constantly playing back into taking care of them and their emotional needs for the rest of your life, because 100%. They will not let you separate from them. So anyway, let's go on the roles.
That's a valid, completely yeah. valid point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we could talk about more, but we're running. Okay.
Yeah, let's
do the roles. Okay.
The roles.
Okay. So there's what we've got, your scapegoat. That's the role that I have played in my
Yellow.
Life.
Oh yeah. That's the scapegoat. Yeah. Yeah. The one that, yeah. that takes the blame for everything, where they project all of their negativities onto.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Everything is your fault.
Everything is your fault.
Yeah.
Why were you even born? You know, it's, and yeah. you feel like that. You legitimately feel like that.
You do. I literally didn't even think I was a real person growing up. I thought I think I told you this before. I used to literally wonder to myself, like, what if they all know I'm a robot and I'm the only one who doesn't know? Because I really felt like I was that unimportant.
Oh yeah, or an alien. Yeah, like really. Right. Yeah.
Okay, my son's cat has just broken into my office.
And, the animals today,
storming the table. This guy, he is on my last nerve today. Okay. Anyway, okay, so let's talk about the lost child. So this is the one who is unseen, right?
Between the cracks.
Yeah. The one who kind of just tries to keep a low profile, you know, on purpose or not, isn't seen by the parents, is more of annoyance, not even an annoyance, just like nothing to this, right?
Invisible.
And, yeah. And this is usually in a family of more than two kids from what I've seen, but not always. Yeah. They feel rejected and they get neglected emotionally and otherwise. And yeah. And they a lot of times, you know, unless they get lucky enough to realize what's going on pretty early in adulthood, they end up either being you know, very successful because they've just been like, okay, I'm just going to do it anyway. Yeah. Or the other way.
The opposite, usually, or they can't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Either they, and sometimes they try to get attention with, you know, doing really well or the other way. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But either way. Yeah. Okay. What else? We've got the
golden child.
Talk about it.
The golden child is the one that's put up on a pedestal by the narcissistic person that can do no wrong, that everybody is meant to measure up to. Mm-hmm. The pressure on the golden child is extreme because they see their other siblings being treated differently, but they are also afraid of being treated poorly. So if they go the route of becoming a narcissist, they tend to be like the mini me to the narcissist. Mm-hmm. If they are not narcissistic, there's an extreme amount of guilt that they end up feeling for the way their siblings were treated, that they were not treated. Or there's confusion as to whether or not the parent is truly narcissistic because they weren't treated bad. And it's, you know how it is with narcissistic abuse or narcissistic anything. You have to live it to understand it.
Right.
And if you're not living the negative, people often ask, why doesn't anyone see this? They see what happens. How come their friends don't know? Well, because they're not actually getting the brunt of it. They're not the main supply or the scapegoat.
Yeah. And then on the other side of it too, you see these, some golden children, I think, break under the pressure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then can we talk about the rotating roles really quick?
That's what I was going to say. You can be any one of these things or all three at the same time. It's super confusing. But the roles are like, the way I see it is the roles are the way the delusion is happening for the narcissist in the moment and what they need to maintain their ego.
Yes.
So whatever it is in the moment is the role they're going to put someone in. And someone may stay a golden child for their entire childhood into their adulthood. And at about 35, something like that. I mean, it could be any age, but let's say in their 30s, wham, the narcissist turns on them and they go, oh my gosh, that is what everyone's been talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You will have a completely different experience as the golden child of a narcissist, as opposed to being the scapegoat or the lost child.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And then there are a lot of other little sub roles we could talk about, but we're not going to do that today. We can maybe talk about it next time if we have
enabler,
time.
Enabler, that's a good one though.
Talk about it.
Enabler, often it's the spouse mm-hmm. of the narcissist or old adult children of the narcissist or a mother of the narcissist where they make excuses for, justify the behavior of, talk about how hard it was for that person growing up. Mm-hmm.
Act as a flying monkey.
They get to play on your empathy. They play to your empathy so that your feelings are diminished.
Yep.
Your experience is diminished and everything again becomes about that narcissist and mm-hmm. that narcissist doesn't have to take accountability and it just on and on it goes. People will often say, well, my dad was a narcissist, but my mom was great. And then when the more they talk about it, they realize, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
He never stood up for me. She saw it, you know, so in that there's this enabling behavior and that's a really awful thing growing up.
It is. Yeah. I won't go into details on anything except right now. I'll just say this. I experienced a situation where the mother was physically abusing the person and the father would bandage up the person mm-hmm. and the person thought for a long time that that father was aces. And it turns out that father was not aces. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's ugly. Point is when you are in a family like this, you are going to have very significant effects. Mm-hmm. The effects can start literally from the day you're born mm-hmm. and it's, you know, whether or not you see a lot of times with, when a couple, you know, one is a narcissist, the other is not, or the other is some other toxic thing, you will find that whoever has the baby, the other parent, or vice versa, one parent gets jealous of the baby, at least. And, you know, and then you'll find the baby might be, you know, and I'm not going to talk about anybody's choices when it comes to things like Cry It Out or whatever, but everybody has their own choices and do what they do. My choices were different than Cry It Out. But I'm not saying I'm right, and I'm not going to go into that. But point being, there's a period of time in that first month of life that is critical. I mean, really the first, 5 years, but in that first month of life, it's very important to have touch. It's important to have skin-to-skin contact. It's important to have eye contact and talking to them. You know, these things for the baby to feel connected to the mother. And a lot of toxic families, they don't connect properly. Now, some of them do in that way because it's natural, because for many, especially mothers, even fathers, that baby is obviously an extension of
about
themselves.
Them. Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. And so, of course, they do great with the baby until, like my mother, she did great with me until I started having ideas that were different than hers, you know, that I was in trouble. So, you know, so it's possible that you could have a seemingly normal up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And then at the point at which you start to recognize, okay, you know, I have different thoughts than you, mom, and you verbalize that, you know, then that might be the point at which you lose your thing. But then again, really, you know, my brother, he was very, he's an intelligent, capable person, but he was also very willing from early on to say whatever she needed to hear him say.
Right.
In order to
he's a boy and you're a girl, and they do that too. That's like gender.
Yeah. That's a really great point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think that's the case in every situation, like not just toxic families, but you'll see even in healthier families, the boy might be more friendly, or I always say, you know, boys take good care of their moms, and the daughters, they fight with their moms sometimes, or vice versa. Right. But in a toxic family, the daughter doesn't get to have her own opinions, nor does the son for that matter. But the parent, that this cat is, he's lucky he is cute. the parent is of one sex is more likely to be willing to be close to the child of the opposite sex.
Right.
Is what I've seen. And why was I telling you that? I don't know. Okay. I thought I was going to tell you something, but I lost it. Oh, I remember one time really quick when I had just been through a very terrible experience with my mother. And I was laying on my bedroom floor crying. My brother came in and he said, "Why don't you just tell her what she wants to hear? Then she wouldn't do that."
Uh-huh.
And I was like, because got I it. Can't, you know, I couldn't lie. I couldn't just say whatever she wanted to hear so that she would shut up and leave me alone. You know?
It's interesting because certain personality types do become the scapegoat for, yes. I mean, I don't want to say for a reason because it's because of the person, but you can see where it doesn't fit in the.
That is such a great point.
You know, right. Yeah. It's their scheme. And if you don't fit in their scheme,
yeah,
that's not to say you don't fit in with your family. That's to say that this person isn't seeing you as an individual and allowing you to be an individual and a human being.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, Lisa. I really want to dig into that a little more in the near future. I want to say one more thing. The personality type that, gosh, I really want to talk. We don't have time. Okay. But that's really good. And that's an important point.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to tell? Okay. Sorry, I'm a scattery. But anyway, we're going to probably get ready to wrap up. And I hate this, but I'm just going to really quickly. Do you want to bring up any other points before we do get ready to wrap up?
I'm trying to think of. Well, there's so many things on this topic, right? I'm trying to think what's quick and won't get. Just go ahead and do what you're doing. And if I interrupt something,
I think we need to do another longer session on this in the near
future. I mean, well, there's so many. You could go in any direction with any of these. You could do a whole hour from each point, right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. Okay, guys, here's our situation. So because Lisa and I are both overbooked today, we only have this long, but we will be back. This cat, I swear to you guys, he's lucky, he's adorable. We will be back next week, hopefully at our regular bat time, which is a little later in the day. It'll be about 12:30, but we'll keep you posted. Make sure, follow, Huffle Mom's got this great set of announcements here right now in the chat to explain to you how to get back in touch with us and things like that. I don't even know if my cat is literally rubbing on the camera. Get on the camera.
Camera.
Cat. He's on the camera.
Okay. Your cat and my dog, man. That's
all. Gonna drive me crazy. I'm pretty sure. Okay. Anyway. All right. So we're back.
I'm laughing because I get it. Can I just finish this?
I've never met a cat like this in my life. He's the sassiest, most rude animal I've ever met. Okay. I told you he has his own TikTok because he's so rude. Okay. All right. So we're wrapping up for today. Make sure you go check out Lisa's channel right here on YouTube, Lisa Colucci, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery, excuse me. And I will put a link to that somewhere here and probably in the description below right after this. What else?
I may try to go live maybe in a half hour.
Oh, great.
I don't have a topic yet. So once I get it in my head together and wake up a little.
Awesome. Yeah. And you'll go into the chat and talk to the people if you have time, will you?
I can't even see the chat because I
have. No, I mean on your channel when you do your, because we talk to the people in the chat more.
Oh, yeah. I always go into the chat if there's questions. Yeah.
Okay. So if you guys have questions, things you want to talk about, I'm really sorry I have to rush out of here, but make sure you go over to Lisa's channel in 30 or 40 minutes. You can send a text message, Lise Live, all one word, LISELIVE, to 33222, and she will text you about 5 minutes before she goes live. And make sure you can be notified. All right. We love you all. We will see you next week. I will hopefully be here on Tuesday with Dana, but I don't know if she's coming. I don't know what's going on. She didn't reply to me last week and she was supposed to be back last week. I'm hoping she's okay. Sure, she's fine, but we'll keep in touch and we'll let you know what happens with that. At least maybe if you aren't scheduled at that time and Dana's not there, maybe you
can. Anytime. Yep.
Yep. All right, guys. We will see you next week. Thank you.